I'm Bill Roop. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
sober today by the grace of God and His program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you very much for your talk. I feel like I was at the Pacific Group. Walk in, they got a short speaker. I was waiting for the other short speaker. Yeah, I see a lot of people. You notice that young lady was saying she was at the retreat. I think I must have made a pass at her. She hasn't come back again. No, I know I didn't. My wife was there. All I'm going to tell you tonight is the way Alcoholics Anonymous has worked in my life, not necessarily the way it should be worked or the way it'll work in your life, because I think it's important from the group I came in with to share your experiences. See, if you want to know how to do it, that's what the book's for. The book will tell you exactly. And if you can follow that and change and be a wonderful person, the book will do it. But in my particular case, when I came in, I've never really learned anything in AA that I didn't know before I came here. I just never thought of doing it. See, when I was at DePaul University, and I'm a Baptist, I went to a Catholic university. I took 4 years of Catholic religion, 4 years of Catholic philosophy. Got A's. Hey, that's my only fan. Where'd you go? I get A's in moral guidance, and I think nothing of watching a girl's butt walk down the aisle at church, you know. So it wasn't something I used. I'm not here because I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't an alcoholic when I came in here. But if you hang around these people, damn well you'll become one. No, I woke up on January 3rd, 1957. Bye, kid. I'm going to tell you a little story. At Skyland in Atlanta, probably 30, 40 years ago, there was a girl who had two children. And the children were obnoxious, making noise, just raising hell. I loved them. See, I'm the type of guy that if somebody drives you nuts, I like that. I like to see you driven nuts, you know. And these kids drove everybody nuts. And I would tell them, people, we ought to keep the kids out of the meeting. I'd say, Jesus said, let the little children come to me, just to drive them crazy, you know. And about 25 years later, both of those kids are in AA. They're sober. So don't ever keep your kid away from the meeting, no matter how young. And you keep coming back sober. It's important. Anyway, I woke up on the floor of a girl's house January 3rd, 1957. I'd been drinking for 3 or 4 days. I was so sick of me, I couldn't stand me. Just couldn't stand me. And I didn't know she called AA, but she called somebody. So I said, Mary, what's that number you called? And she gave it to me. And she said she never thought I'd call. But I called from her place. I went home, like I say, I'd been drinking for a couple days. Hadn't had any sleep. And yet I could go back at that time and get 2 or 3 hours sleep, and I could recover quite rapidly. So two guys came to my house. My kids were there. I had 5 kids. My wife was there. They came out to my house to see me. I wasn't impressed with either one of them. One guy kept shaking his head like this, and I figured he's nuts. Should never have made the phone call. And the other guy said, my name is John Hanley. I'm a general foreman at U.S. Steel, and I'm an alcoholic. I figured, Jesus, now I have to hang around with Polex from the steel mills. I should never have called that number. But because I'm a Protestant and a Baptist, I figure when you call a minister, you ought to go to church once. It's only fair. So I went to an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Chicago Heights, Illinois. It was a meeting like this. There's kids there, women there, men there. Guy was running his mouth like me. I figured, Jesus, this was like any Baptist church on a Wednesday night. Why did I ever make that phone call? And as soon as it was over, I was going to get gone. But Art Hodes didn't take me home. He asked another guy to take me home. And this, you kids won't even know what I'm talking about, but Daniel will. This guy had a great big Packard automobile with big side mounts on the side. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. He used to play cards with a president of the United States from Indiana. He knew Mayor Daley in Chicago. He was more my type of guy. And he took me home. When I got out of the car, he told me I ought to come to a closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I explained to him that I owned a company. I hadn't been doing very well with it, so I was going to have to devote more time. And he started telling me in Yankee profanity what the hell I was. And he kept jabbing me with his gun. I'm ducking him, you know. And I was 34 and he was 54. I could have nailed him good, you know. But for some reason, I just started to laugh and said, I'll go. So I went to Homewood 17 that Friday. I don't know if any of you are sturdy enough material to make it at Homewood 17. I'll give you an idea of what it was like. Mostly guys, we were so profane, most women didn't last, you know. We were the same guys that were in the bar. They're all telling lies about World War II. I was right there with them. Anytime you tell a lie, I tell a bigger one. It took me 15 years to realize some of them weren't lying. Some actually... some of them had actually done that stuff. You know? I've always said everything I said from the podium was true. Except I wasn't in a lot of the escapades, you know. I used to tell one about it. I came around the corner with my submachine gun and it was a German sitting down with his pants down going to the bathroom. So instead of shooting, I yelled, Hand hoch! Jeez, he looked at me and got scared and ran out. That wasn't my story, but that's the one I told. But it was a true story. A guy from the 82nd Airborne told me that on the way home. So if you wonder if you came in here and got a handle on the honesty right away, not me. Houlihan and I, here's another guy from World War II, one-legged Marine, got his leg blown off at Guadalcanal. He and I used to sit in the car and we'd say after the meeting that, you know, we're so crooked, they won't be able to lay us down in the coffin. They're going to have to screw us into the ground, you know. But we didn't drink. Homewood 17 would start at 8 o'clock, 8:15. Somebody would say, hey, you're going to lead the meeting. So at 8:30, he'd say, okay, anybody, what kind of a day did you have, Blondie? And you'd tell me, and somebody cut me a bag. Yeah, well, you just got to love them, you know. Somebody else say something. That went on until midnight. Now, the reason the AA meeting lasted until midnight was because it was a Friday, and back in those days, Catholics couldn't eat meat on Friday. So if the meeting ended before midnight, the Protestants would eat all the ham. So the Catholics would keep the meeting going until midnight. Then after that was over, you had to put a buck in the till. And then they had a card game. Jesus, it was a great card game. I figured, I've been living by my wits the last few years, I figured this be a way of supplementing my income. Except they played crazy games. They had like 9, 10 guys in the game. 3 cards this way, 2 cards this way. You only got 3 cards. You had to make the best hand. Aces was high. Jacks are bad. I finally won one. I said, I got a winner. And they said, you got to go faster, kid. They'd already split the pot. They weren't as smart than me, but they were faster than me. They placed a big thing on not drinking. Big thing. When I came in, the first meeting I went to, I could see that the only thing I didn't like about the meeting, they had this fixation on not drinking. They kept talking about not drinking. I thought, geez, these are hell of a guys, but they're stuck in a rut. You know. And on top of that, being a lawyer, I knew that one guy made some statement about what he'd done. And the statute of limitations hadn't run out. I was going to tell them to cool it for another 2 years. They can still put you in the in a pen. I might as well tell you now, I'm only a lawyer when I drink. But at that time, I drank. After the meeting, a guy comes up to me and he says, Bill, can you stay away from a drink for 24 hours? And I said, why? Why would I want to do that? See, because whenever I got sober, I got suicidal. I hated me. When I was drinking, I'll take care of that tomorrow. Let's have a drink. Hey, honey, want to dance? You know, all the important things. In the meantime, every time I get sober, I feel, you no good, rotten, you know. Then I have a drink and it'll be all right. So when he said, can you stay away from a drink 24 hours? And I said, why? Why would I do that? He said the magic words to me. He said, because based on our experience, if you do, your life will get better. See, my life sucked. I came in here, really, I was a loser. I led troops in combat. I graduated from DePaul 4 years. When I graduated from DePaul, I had 4 children. My wife and I lived with my mother-in-law. A lot of things I'd done, but I thought I was a loser. And whatever you think is, if you think you're a loser, you are. If you think the weather is, you know, if you think today's HS, it is. If you think life sucks, it sucks. Okay? And that's the way my thinking went. So really what this is an altered attitudes. AA is altered attitudes. I'll give you a little idea. The honesty didn't come too quick to me. I think it's going to come tomorrow. But one of the guys I'd impressed with my stories when we were drinking in a bar, he came into AA 2 years before I did. And when I came in, he told everybody, the heroes are in AA. He says, this fellow that just came in, meaning me, has got the Congressional Medal of Honor. Now, I didn't have, and I don't have today, but I didn't want to say anything because, you know, they would think he confused people. You know, guy's got 2 years on the program, he tells you something, you wouldn't think he's a liar. So I didn't want to say anything. People from the meeting he went to would come up to me and say, Bill, I understand you had quite a war record. And I'd say, I'd just as soon not talk about it. I got a reputation as being a humble hero. Until some Yankee broad comes up and says, what's this Congressional Medal of Honor? BS. And I said, I don't have it. But I had it for 6 months in AA, and that's longer than you guys had it. Jesus. Home in 17. Put a big deal on not drinking. The card game was wonderful. You know, you got to realize what sort of a nitwit I was when I came in. I defended anybody I liked. And I liked that home in 17. Now, we had a card game. And somebody, Elena, any Elenas here? All right, this will be for you. There's no other Elena. Oh, here's one. Somebody yelling on women couldn't understand that if their husband, who was coming into AA, came and played in our card game and lost his paycheck, that it was any different than if he'd have lost it in the bar. I explained to him, he's sober. By God, he's sober. What more do you want? I look back and I said, Jesus, we were all nuts. But I was proud of it. We didn't drink. They talk about, when I came in here, I wasn't a God guy. See, when I was 16 years of age at Conference Point Camp in Williams Bay, Wisconsin, Jesus Christ came into my life when I was sitting out on a knoll overlooking Lake Geneva. I was spirit-filled. And I would have been perfect if you girls hadn't developed bumps. Because I was doing pretty good up until then. In other words, I walked away from them. My God. So today I know that if you come in and you accept God as your higher power, whatever, And you get full of the Spirit and you go out and help people. You better remember not to drink. Because you can't live on yesterday's spirituality. You got to have it today. So Homewood 17, I started out at that time in Chicago and the suburbs. Was it the same in Cleveland where it was the dry dime? Somebody would put a dime in the phone and call you. So you'd always get wet drunks. And whoever went out and called, usually it was two of us would go out. But a lot of times there weren't two of us around during the day. They were working. And I wasn't working so well. So I'd go out on these calls and I'd take them to meetings. I asked my sponsor, I got one call after about 4 days on the program. I said, what do I do? He says, well, go out and see him, listen to him, and try to tell him. I said, what can I tell him? He says, you can tell him how you stayed sober 4 days. That you can tell him. And he says, and then what you want to do is get him to a meeting. He says, that's what the message is at the meeting. You're not the message. You're the messenger. See, so I don't have any delusions that when I go out and talk to somebody that they're going to hear my message. But I may intrigue them enough to come to a meeting where you look at the girls, even if his motives aren't good, you know. Anything to keep the SOB here, you know. Anyway. So I did a lot of that. I started a picnic. We had 500 people at the picnic, a lot of kids. I was active. This is in my first two and a half years. And after 2.5 years, I went over to my sponsor and I said, Jack, I don't think I'm going to make it. He says, why, did you drink? I said, no, I haven't had the urge to take a drink since I came here. So that's another interesting thing. I was drunk 2 or 3 times a week. I drank every day for the 4 years before I came in. And yet I walk in this outfit not even thinking I'm an alcoholic. And God removed the desire to drink from me. I've never had the urge to take a drink. It can't be me. I thought it was me, you know. So he said, did you take a drink? I said, no, I don't drink. He said, but you don't understand, Bill, alcoholics go to institutions, they go to nut houses, they give them wet brains. They die drunk. You're doing something alcoholics can't do. You're staying sober. You're a miracle. At the top of your list of what to be grateful for, list sobriety. You got it. You notice up until now I haven't said anything about the big book. I haven't talked about the steps. 2.5 years I'd heard about the steps. We'd read them once in a while. In fact, I tried to destroy AA in Chicago. One of my pigeons, came up to me and he said, Bill, why don't we read this? And I said, read this? This isn't a library group. What do you mean read this? You want to read? Go to the library. This is AA. You share your strengths and your experiences. We don't read. That was how it works. It came from California to Chicago. I tried to throw it out. Wouldn't listen to me. Still going on. Dr. Bob said to Bill Wilson one time, he said, Willie, if we could have destroyed AA, we'd have already done it. So don't ever think you're going to destroy it. AA is a God-given program. You can't destroy it. It may destroy you, but you ain't going to destroy it. And either if a kid yells at a meeting or if somebody does something else against a tradition or something like that, you ain't going to destroy AA. So I place a big priority on not drinking. But because I was not drinking and I was taken care of, involved with people and working with people, I wasn't doing anything for myself. See, I always used to say that Alcoholics Anonymous, if you come in and you don't take a drink for just one day, your life will get better. And it's true. And then if you work the steps, you'll get better. You notice I didn't say, read the steps. See, if you don't live the steps, it ain't doing any good. Hell, I heard all this stuff before I ever came here. I never thought of doing it. You know, we talk in the Bible and other Alcoholics Anonymous about love. And they talk about love God, love your God with all your heart and all your soul, your neighbors, yourself. And I thought, I am part of a prison group with my designated driver over there, Dan. Since he got sober, I let him drive. He's only got 25 years, so watch him, you know. So we go to a prison group on Thursday night, and I tell the people there, I said, I don't care if you drink or you don't drink, I'm going to love you, but I won't see you. Because if you drink, I'm not going to be going where you're going. So my love isn't predicated on how good you are. And now how can I say I love everybody? Because my definition of love is I wish you well. Whatever you are, I don't care if you're a horse thief, I hope you get better horses to steal, whatever. You know, I just hope you make it, just for one day. See, I can do that. And the great thing about this is, since I've been doing this for 51 years now, I got this love down pat. You're looking at a love genius. So Jan Bowles, one of my pigeons, and I, we go down to America's last year. On Sunday, we're going over to hear Jimmy Carter. We're going over to hear Jimmy Carter in his Bible class in Plains. But on Saturday night, we're going to an AA meeting. So we get in the car and we go to this little town, and it's dark. This is one of those Georgia towns that they roll up the sidewalks at 7. It was pitch dark. I didn't have the directions. They were back in a motel. I don't carry things around me like I should sometimes. But anyway, so we drive into Plains, and I said to Bowles, I said, do you know where we're going? He said, hell no. I said, either do I. Hey, God, you better send somebody to help us. Geez, we look out the window, and there's a black guy walking a dog. So we yell, hey, do you know where the AA meeting is? He says, yeah, right back here, turn right on Pine Street, go down and take a left. We did. Now we started out of town, and I figured, we've gone too far. We're supposed to be on our left, we've gone too far. Hey, God, we need another one. Another black guy. The only two people we saw in the town were black guys. I don't know if you guys noticed, but angels are black. I know it. I found out that night. He knew where it was. Here we are, I'm plugged into God, asking for help, everything going good, and loving people. I walk into the meeting, and there's a fellow up there going, my name is Red Boy. I'm an alcoholic. And he's got a patch on one eye. And he can hardly talk, and he's reading how it works. And here's the genius that's out of judgment and into love thinks, who's that asshole? That's after 50 years of love. Anyway, I sat through it. Fat boy, the reason he couldn't talk very well, he tried to hang himself drinking, and he hurt his vocal cords. The reason he's wearing a patch, because when he was eating, instead of putting the fork in his mouth, he put it in his eye. Lost his eye. And he learned how to read with the big book. Pat Boy was one of my heroes. See, I was given a spiritual gift when I was very young. I can walk in any room and spot assholes. There's one in the front row. And I can tell when I'm plugged into God. When I walk into a strange room, I don't know. I know a lot of you people, but I know a lot of me, I don't know. If I get into me, I start wondering, what will they think of me? What kind of talk will they get? Bah, 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 bah. You know, get into me. And if I'm into me, I'm into judgment. But if I walk in and I see all you guys as King's kids and girls, I know I'm plugged into God. Because God is love. I knew this before I came here. I never thought of doing it. Why do I say that people do it here? If they don't, they wish they did. You know, like sometimes I don't do so well, but I wish it. The second meeting I went to was over a bar in Chicago Heights. One of my heroes when I was drinking was there. This fellow was a Marine, got in on three invasions. He's in the Marine Infantry. And he used to sit in a bar in this little town. And drink, and all of a sudden you reach over and grab the bartender and hit him, and then sit back. The bartender called the cops. Cops would put on their riot gear and come out and beat him bloody, drag him off. That was my hero. He came into AA a year ahead of me. So my hero's up there making coffee. So I walked in, he says, "Hey kid, what's the matter with you?" And I told him. He said, "What are you going to do about it?" I said, "I'm going to get a tire iron and bust his head." He said, "Don't drink while I take you to jail." I said, "Yeah, wise guy, how would you do it?" He said, "I'd pray for him." Here's a guy that was solved everything because he was afraid with his fists. And now he's praying for it. See, I learned right off the bat, I watch by what a guy does, not by what he says. So I've been praying ever since, off and on. And now that I'm perfect and I pray wonderfully. The other day, one of my pigeons calls up and he gives me his long tail of wool. And I immediately got into self. I'll get a lawyer. I got one. I'll get him and we'll get you out of it. Oh, you'll be out of this. In the middle of my diatribe, I'm thinking, what happened to giving it to God? So I shut up and I said, "Why don't we say a prayer and I'll give it to God?" We did. 2 days later, there wasn't any problem. But we would have, if I'd have stirred up to... I'll tell you one thing I learned from a guy in Alabama. So I'm from Chicago and I've been learning from Southerners ever since I came down here. This guy is from Alabama. Did you know Jim Glass? Jim Glass is a great guy. A lot of Southerners didn't like him. He was sort of obnoxious, but he seemed like one of the guys from Chicago to me, you know. Anyway, Jim Glass, after he knew me a little bit, he came over to me one day and he says, "You know, in Alabama, Bill, we have a saying. And our saying is, I've been watching you, Bill." He came in after me. I had seniority. See, people haven't been respectful of me. I mean, I had seniority, and the guy's telling me what my flaws are, you know. It's a curse. Anyway, he said, "Bill, I want to tell you a story that way we do things in Alabama." He says, "Bill, I want to tell you this, that cat shit stinks. And if you stir it, it really stinks." He said, "I've been watching you for 2 years, Bill. You go around stirring cat shit. Today, I don't want to stir it. But sometimes when I'm thinking, this guy calls me up, and if we get a lawyer, I'm back stirring it." What I'm saying is, after you put, based on my experience, after you put the cork in the jug, and you get a God that you trust, and you try to do, you find out, basically, I'm still the same guy I ever was. I'm making different choices now. And if I plug in, because I got free will, if I plug into the old doings, I'm going to have misery. It's got nothing to do with drinking. See the steps. Don't start out in the big book. It starts out with Bill Wilson says, "I'm a drunk." And he says in chapter 2, there is a solution. Chapter 3, so we're going to talk more about alcohol. Chapter 4, the agnostic. That's when he gets into the spiritual. And finally in chapter 5, we get to the steps. See, the way I look at it, the way it's been my experience, is if you come in, don't take a drink for one day, you're a winner, and if you keep doing this, you're going to find out like I found out that drink wasn't my problem. I can't stand me doing what I was doing. See, if you sober up a drunken horse thief, all you got is a sober horse thief. And that's what I was. I didn't steal horses, you know. But I kited checks. I remember, you know, because I've been doing it. So, you know, I got 5 kids to support and a wife. I'll get the little mouth. Wah, 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 want to be fed, you know. I'll get it for you. Here's a bum bum chick, you know. And that's after I'm sober because I've been doing it for years. Everything was going good until they put computers in. Everything came to do on the same day. I had to go over and borrow $500 from one of my pigeons to bail me out. But I'd had 4 years in the program, so I was doing pretty good. Some of you get going a lot easier than I did. Mine's been slow growth. But I'm glad it was. Because I've seen guys with fast growth. A lot of them go back drinking. My wife came in AA a year after I did. We drank together. We got married when we were 20. We had a child before I went overseas. When I got home, a friend of mine says, "Why don't you go to the university?" I said, I didn't do good in high school. I don't know if I could. He said, why don't you give it a shot? So I went down there, and Loyola University in Chicago accepted me. And that's when I had a course in logic that I still use today. Logic has nothing to do with the truth. You can put things in a logical order that are lies. I like that, you know. But it sounds good, you know. You know, one of the theory of the distributable middle is a cat has four legs. A table has four legs. Therefore, a cat's a table. See, logically, that makes sense. And a lot of politicians do that. What they're doing is lying, but it sounds good. You know. Anyway, I remember that. I learned something else at Loyola, Jesuits. Any of you Catholics in here? Well, there's one that admits it. Aha, two, three, ha, ha, ha. See, I learned what a Jesuit's sworn to poverty means. I learned that at Loyola. After we get out of a philosophy class, the Jesuit was done for the day. We go across the street to the bar to discuss philosophy and drink. And what a Jesuit claimed that he believes he's sworn to poverty means you buy. I got that out of Loyola. My wife and I, when I came home, there wasn't any place for us to go. I had one child. She was living with my mother-in-law. So there was Peggy, my daughter, my wife, Janet, and my mother-in-law. And then I moved in with them. So by the time I got out of my first year at a Catholic university, there was my mother-in-law, my daughter Peggy, my wife and I, and my son John. Now this is in a one-bedroom, third-story, dinette kitchenette apartment. At the end of my sophomore year, there was my mother-in-law, my wife and I, my son John, my son Bill. Nothing's got any bigger. At the end of my junior year, there was my mother-in-law, my wife and I, my son John, my son Bill, my son Richard. The place is gamey. I'd be down there with the, and you people don't know this, but back then we used to have cloth diapers. And we had no money, so we had to fold a cloth diaper. The urine rots them. Or what is it? We used to put, no, bleach. No, we put bleach in. The bleach rotted. So you can't have holes in the diaper, so you take the diaper, keep folding it. See, and I'd be sitting down there doing the laundry and thinking, you know, this is very similar to what Abraham Lincoln went through. He sat in front of the fireplace. He became a lawyer. Then he became President of the United States. I wonder how long it'll take me to do those two things. Then I'd get drinking and forget about it, you know. But so my wife used to bitch a lot. She was home with the kids, you know, and she's a drunk. So I remember, I'll tell you what, I came home one night and, well, I'd been out for a couple of days. And the only reason I came home is I had no energy. If I'd had energy, I'd have kept going. And, you know, I was beat. So I come in and she's an Irish girl, beautiful Irish girl. She's nice, I'll show you her picture afterwards, you know. Boy, she's gorgeous. Anyway. She was raising so much hell, I said, honey, I'll take you out, being a good husband. I'll tell you, we went down to the bar. Everybody that I was drinking with for a couple of days, they were gone. They were married to Al-Anons, or future Al-Anons. Once the Al-Anon bitches, she lets you sleep. Drunken wives that are alcoholic don't let you sleep if they ain't got enough. She would nag me, so we went down. And it was boring. We come back upstairs and she said, That's boring. Now, I got tired of this. So I figured, I remember one thing I learned when I was in the service one time, I had to take prisoners, couldn't bring them back. That if you lay them on their stomach and sit on their buttocks, grab their heels and pull them up, put a rope around them, and then pivot around and get their neck and pull their hair back, and you can tie it around here. So you got them bowed, and then you got to tie their feet. And when you get all this done, they don't like you doing this. So they yell. So my wife was yelling, so I held her nose and put the handkerchief in. and peace reigned over our apartment, except for the two cops that were there. See, I'm a Baptist. We Baptists don't sin, at least not facing each other, you know. So, but I married into an Irish family. My mother-in-law had a drunken husband. She knew how to handle me. She called the cops. Now I'm really mad. I'm telling them I'm a lawyer. As soon as they get my gun, you had no right to come to my house. I'm going to run your butt out. And the one cop is telling me, go get your gun. I guess he wants to shoot me. And the other cop is over there going like this, which is about 4 feet away to the kitchen. So I go out and say, what the hell do you want? He says, how do you do that? So I've been going over the country teaching people how to do it in case you get a... You say you don't do a good job for your husband. He'll tie you up. Won't hurt you. Mickey used to say, they put you in jail for that. They call it spousal abuse. I said, spousal abuse? I kept her from hitting me. That's, is that spousal abuse? That was a fun night. And the kids are watching all this, of course. Mom and Daddy having fun. So then I graduate. We move to Park Forest. We get a nice three-bedroom, big living room, big dining room, kitchen, downstairs, basement. Everything was going good until I came home one night and I said, hey, you should see the people I met over at the Dawn Club. The same people I met before. And we're off again. Off again. So one night, it was at 10:30 at night, the Chicago Heights is a town very near Park Forest. It abuts Park Forest. It's an Italian community, basically. It's a mafia town, even today. Mafias are nice people. I don't know if you had any experience with them. They do things a little differently than a lot of people. But they have different jobs, you know, but they do well. And so I at that time, they said, Bill, why don't you go over and get a pizza? So I go to Chicago Heights, that's where they had the best pizza. So I'm driving down 26th Street into the Heights. I come up to Western Avenue, Chicago Road. And there's a cop in front of me, another cop on the side of me. I don't know why. And so one cop says, get out of the car. And he wants me to get out on this side. Well, I can't because I'd loaded the car to a guy in a bar. And he came back and he said, Bill, I had a little accident. Your door's pushed in. We can't open it. That didn't bother me. I just parked the good side. So you could see I was successful. So I just kept talking. So he told me to get out on that side, and I couldn't do it. So I slid over to this side to get out, and I look, and here's this big goof. In Chicago, the cops used to carry a leather strap and a lead weight in the end. And they would take and flick it, and they'd bust your head. I had a relatives on the force, so we used to take these things and break redwood tables in the picnic park. Kaboom, blah, you know. This SOB is about to do it to my head. So I bent down and he hit the thing, hit the top of the car, and I came up under his neck and got him with a karate chop, and down he went. And I'm standing there looking at him. See, I'd been trained in this, but I'd never seen it work. Every time I tried it, and a guy in a bar, you want to fight? Yeah. He beat the shit, you know. I didn't even get him a chop, you know. Anyway, now they take me to Chicago, or to Park Forest. All you had to do at that time is put your fingers together and walk a straight line. If you did that, you weren't drunk. So I did it. So I was excused. You know, I was charged, found innocent, and excused. But they've impounded my car. The reason they impounded my car, this goofy guy, when he got revived, he drove my car. And my car worked, but you had to know how it worked. If you want the brakes to work, you pump them. If you want the windshield to go down, you tap, it'll fall. If you want the windshield wiper to work, reach out and grab it, you know. So the thing worked pretty good, but you had to have it struck. He didn't know that. He came up to 26th Street, I'm told, Western Avenue. Red light, put on the brakes, went right through. Hamner got killed, you know. Anyway, so he's bitching and griping, I'm driving a defective vehicle, so they impounded it. So the cop is driving me home, his buddy, he said, Mr. Roop, he said, I would have sworn you were drinking. I said, well, being a lawyer, you can't be tried twice for the same crime. I'm drunk right now, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Look down. I'm in handcuffs. Now I'm in the Chicago Heights jail. Won't do any good being a lawyer over there. I became a member of the mafia. I started raising so much hell that the chief of police came down, then the mayor came down. Not the mayor, he was the head mafia, mafioso. All of a sudden, at 2 o'clock in the morning, they bring my car back. They release me. I don't know what he told the guy, but he probably told him, we got some guy claiming he's one of your men. And I could have been a hitman from Detroit. You can't lock up an honest guy. You know, you would cause all sorts of trouble to the mafia. So they let me go. So I come back to the Dawn Club. Now it's 1:30 in the morning. I walk in, and they all say, where's the pizza? That's what life was like. You know, I don't see alcoholics as people. I see them as people on the stage of life. They aren't out in the audience. They're sitting up on the church steps, setting themselves on fire. But if you do that, if you, in AA, I'll tell you, this is true, I think. If you set yourself on fire, say you right tonight, you just got up and lit yourself, you probably would be the topic of conversation for about maybe 30 seconds. The guy in back would say, I can't comb my hair straight. I keep getting snarls. We were a self-centered bunch. I'm not interested in your problems. I want to hear about me, you know. That hasn't changed too much. So I come down to Atlanta, and now I get into the steps. I get into the steps. And I try to live the steps. So I used to say that this ideal that you got to love your God with all your heart and all your soul and your neighbor yourself, people couldn't do it. I tried, you can't do it. And then the Amish come along. Jesus, those people. Some jerk who's delivering milk takes a gun into a schoolroom of the Amish kids and kills 7 of them, I guess. And then kills himself. And what did the parents do? They prayed for the guy. They had a service and got the guy's widow. Please come to the service. We got to have peace. They raised money for his family because the widow needed him. See, they practice love. It can be done. So I know it can be done. And the Amish even tore down the schoolhouse because they don't want any remembrances. So the next time you have a resentment you can't let go of, pray and love the guy or gal or your mother, whatever it is you resent. What, for her sake? No, so you can get healthy. If your mother was a bitch, you'd die a bitch, maybe. But you'll get healthy. Well, maybe not healthy, but healthier. No. That's what we got here. We got people helping people. That's why I like AA. AA to me is, and I love what I hear here. I was at a Wednesday meeting at the Gwinnett Room. And one guy had 10 years, he is a lawyer, he came, and he really is, you know. He's a lawyer, he came into the meeting and he said, you know, sometimes our motives to come to a meeting aren't too good. He said, for example, when I came in today, I came in to look at the girls. And a girl sitting in the front row turns around and says, what the hell's wrong with that? I'm a lesbian, so do I. Where else do you hear this good stuff? You know, he says, it's wonderful. All you got to do is not drink for one day. I never said I'll not drink again. I'm not drinking today. And all of a sudden, it's 51 years. I was talking to somebody what had 30 here, or 20. I asked her, I said, did you plan when you come in that you're going to do 20 years? No, you don't do it. You just do a day at a time. But you can't do it without God. The steps say, I can't, you can. I think I'll let them. Got God right off the bat. Then the next 4 steps sort of let you tell people, tell yourself to what you are. You got to find out what you're bringing to the table. It's 4 through 9, our chance to make amends, to be a better person. That's why you make the amends. But a lot of guys I made amends for said, oh, forget it, Bill. I wasn't making it for them. I was making it for me. And then after you get done with 9, then you got to continue carrying a message. You got the vessel clean or cleaner, and you got to keep it clean. And the Bible said There was a demon in a guy, and the demon left. Demon went running around. The guy was clean inside. And the demon couldn't find another body to get into, so he came back with, what is it, 8 of his friends. I've seen it happen in AA. Guy gets spiritual. He does everything great. And all of a sudden, he don't go to meetings. He don't do this. Some girl looks good. See, when you girls started to look good to me, my wife always started to have pimples. Jesus. Why would you be married to that bitch? She got wrinkles. Of course, she's 70 years old. No, no, wasn't. But see, when you do that, and you're a Baptist, because Baptists don't sin, and you're thinking of dumping your wife, it can't be your fault. It's got to be her. That's insane. But that's what happens. I'm so blessed. My wife and I came in. She came in a year after me. We had a lot of problems during our lifetime. I think I tell people today why. They'll say, how did you stay married? It was very easy. We had 5 kids and no money. She'd say, who the hell would marry me with 5 kids? And she'd say, I get the kids. And I said, no, you don't get the kids. I get the kids. And we'd fight about that. But the last 6 years, or 6 years of her life, she had Alzheimer's. And she became completely bedridden. And I got to take care of her. See, you girls, when you were young kids, you got dolls. We guys didn't get dolls. We got cowboy outfits. We got trains. I want a doll. I never got a doll. The last 3 years of her life, I had a doll. I could take care of her. And my doll was better than any doll you ever had, because my doll pooped. I ended up with that woman. I love her even today. She's been dead a year and a few months. I've got a chair, a little alcove there on the bed. She's sitting there the way she was in the hospital bed in the living room. Somebody took a picture of her just staring at me. She'd come in there and she'd say, go sit down. That was love. See, she was a control freak all her life. That's why I was going to dump her. She used to throw my keys away so I wouldn't go to work. She wanted me to stay with her. There's a lot of stuff that I really shouldn't have taken, you know. And I'm not telling her what I did. I'm just telling you what she did, you know. But, God, we ended up in love. Love, love, love. I get up. I had a rotator every 2 hours. I get up and run out to see if she's alive. Smell her. Make sure she breathes and look. Take care of her. You know why that was? Because I'd never been needed. She needed me. See, you women get needed by your kids. Husbands a lot of times are off working. Not so much today. You women are working too. But back in my day, the woman was with the kids. She took care. My wife took care of the kids. They were hurting. I was gone. For the last 3 years, really, I was needed. And it's a wonderful feeling. She used to say, I love that woman. So what I say to you, life's an ongoing thing. If the bitch you're married to, you figure you're not going to take anymore, maybe you ought to pray for yourself because you're full of hot air. Because the problem is you. And if the husband, the problem is you. See, it's not what happens to me, it's how I react to it. I'm not going to, Jesus, I've seen people change. Now, this is not always true. Some people get divorced and they have a great life with a new one. But I've seen a lot of people get divorced and they got exactly the same person, only younger or older. And just, you know, somewhere we got to work on ourselves with God's help. So that's my story. Story of two people, two drunks, that God gave the message to AA, gave it to us. Today I've got a son that's got 25 years in AA. I got a grandson that's in AA. Jan and I were sober until she died, and I hope until I die. Why would I want to not come? I'll tell you why. Guys like Dick Anderson. I like Dick. You, I met tonight. I like you. You that I met. I like you. If I leave here, I'm going to miss you. So I stay. And I tell people wonderful things like, if you don't drink, your life will get better. And if you work the steps, you'll get better. In the morning, the little angel on my right shoulder says, Bill, it's morning, wake up. It's another day of God. The little devil on my left shoulder says, it's a hell of a day. And I get to make the final choice what I'm going to have. But no matter what choice you make, if you go to bed that night without taking a drink, remember, you're a winner and I love you.